be on snaring. Item number 27 on the agenda.
Good morning, members of the commission and Secretary Hepler. Keith Fisk with the Wildlife Division. I'm the administrator of the statewide wildlife damage programs. If you'll recall here for the last several months, we've had several different discussions with you in regards to snares on public lands. And just to recap from our last meeting, we had developed a small work group and pulled those folks together and brought back to you the discussion from that work group, as well as a five-point plan, if you will, in regards to how to better educate individuals about the public lands that snares could be out there, and do some additional and educational outreach in the hunting handbook and our hunting atlas, targeted emails, potentially some signage on our game production area, some of those types of things. At that time, you, the commission, directed us to take that topic back to our field staff and our regional employees and solicit more information and potentially bring forward a recommendation at this meeting. We had a lot of good discussion, and ultimately where we ended up as a department recommendation would have or is no recommended changes from where we're currently at. However, we did want to have a discussion with you to talk about some of the things that we talked about, as well as provide you with enough information, answer questions, that if you chose to formulate your own proposal, you would have the information to do that as well. So real briefly, I brought three snares along today, since most of you probably haven't seen them and aren't familiar with them. All three of these snares are lethal snares, and I have the rule in front of you there, 4108.0205, that talks about some of the restrictions that we have here in South Dakota, and I'm just going to demonstrate on these snares as we walk those through. So first off, snares have to be equipped with either a breakaway device, which breaks at less than 350 pounds, and that's in case a deer or a cow gets caught in a snare, that they have enough strength that it can break the device. And what that device is, a breakaway, is a little S hook that you can see here, and when there's enough pressure exerted on that, it simply straightens out and then the snare comes off. If you don't have that, we require a deer stop, which when the snare is closed, it can't close any tighter than 2.5 inches, so if there was a deer leg in there, it can obviously slip it out and get away. There's a tremendous amount of variety and differences in the construction of snares, from the types of cables to the types of locks to the length, all those different types of things. This lock, all these locks only work in one direction. In other words, they're non-relaxing locks. I have one here. It's a non-relaxing lock that has a dispatch spring or a kill spring or a choke spring or a compression spring. What that does is it's intended to apply additional pressure to the lock, which makes it more difficult for it to back off. You talk to a lot of people, and if you're in the industry enough, you talk to 10 guys on what their preferred construction type is, you're going to get 15 different answers. It's really a lot of personal preference. People use and experiment with different equipment types, and then they usually find something that works best for them, but it may not work best for the next individual. And we see a tremendous variety with our own staff in regards to how they like to outfit their equipment than when they're working for the department. Yeah, sure, Tony. And as Tony's passing those around, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. The other thing that's important to point out when we're talking about snares and how they function, they're designed to be an efficient and effective and a humane tool. And we talked about the construction, but two key elements that dictate how those snares work as well is, one, the area in which they're set. So if they're set in areas with a lot of brush, trees, fences, anything like that for the animal to become entangled upon is key. And then probably the most important component is how the animal behaves once it's in that device. Does it take several lunges where It closes that loop down around the animal's neck and cuts off the air supply quicker. Those two are probably, or are, the most key components to how effective those snares are. So where they're set on the landscape, what type of territory they're set in, and then most importantly, how the animal actually reacts when it's caught in the snare. So taking a look there on the top of your page, the rule, so they have to have the breakaway device or they have to have a deer stop. They also have to have a swivel on the end. And then here in South Dakota, if they're attached to any type of a fence, they have to have permission of the landowner as well as the adjoining landowner. And then on public lands, they cannot be used from May 1 to November 13th. So on public lands, they can't be used until November 14th of each year. And that's also true, I should say, for improved road right-of-ways. So we're talking about public lands and improved road right-of-ways. And then snaring in road right-of-ways, it falls suit with the hunting and road right-of-ways. You can't set snares or traps within the 660 feet of public land, just like you can't pheasant hunt or discharge a firearm near a homestead or cattle. So the same restriction applies there as well. So we broke, when we started our discussion, we broke it up into three different types of potential restrictions. We talked about time restrictions. So is there a certain time of year when they should be allowed or further restricted from where we're at? We talked about equipment restrictions. In other words, should there be some type of modifications to the types of equipment that could be used? And then also we talked about, is there a restriction that types or talks about if there should be a prohibition on different types of areas, in other words, types of public land. So we broke it into three different areas. The commission had asked for some information on how surrounding states handle snares, so I'm going to share that information with you as well. So if you'll turn your attention there to the top table that I have there, I went around to the surrounding states here in South Dakota and looked at their regulation in regards to how they handle snares on public lands. And you'll see it runs the full gamut. From North Dakota and Nebraska, they don't allow them on public lands until after the bird seasons. Wyoming, Montana, Iowa, they don't have any restrictions. And then in Minnesota, they actually split their state in a north zone and a south zone. In the southern part of the state, not allowed on public lands. Northern part of the state, they do allow them on public lands. We talked about modifying the potential dates to potentially December 1st or December 15th, and ultimately we felt that a change in the dates wouldn't prohibit what occurred this past year, where we had two individuals report that they had dogs caught in snares. They weren't killed, they were able to be released, but by changing the date, we weren't going to be able to avoid that type of potential conflict that occurs on the landscape. The other thing the commission had asked about was, you know, should we initiate some type of tagging or marking requirement with traps and snares? And again, you'll see the very far right, all the surrounding states do require that. We talked about that as an agency as well, and not a lot of support from department employees to do that, just simply because there's not a lot of benefit necessarily to gain by having those folks identify those traps or snares. And if we were to go down that route, just to be clear, we wouldn't require people to have their names and addresses. It would be a unique identification number that the department would give to every individual. Talk to our law enforcement folks. They do have some support for it, where it would at least be a starting point that if they encountered an illegal set, that they would at least have a starting point with potentially trying to find out who that individual was. So there was some support from our law enforcement folks. Moving down to the middle chart or table there about the United States, this is when we got into potential restrictions on equipment. And it's kind of small there, but the states in white, they don't have any equipment restrictions other than the swivels and the deer stops, some of the more traditional type restrictions. The areas in dark gray or black, those states like Colorado, Washington, Oklahoma, they don't allow snares to be used in their states at all. And then moving east there to the checkered states such as Wisconsin, Missouri, and Michigan, and some of those states more to the east, those areas do restrict different types of equipment. They've moved to they've moved exclusively to non-lethal snares. And along with non-lethal snares, it has to be a relaxing lock. It comes along with a 24-hour check period. They have to be checked every 24 hours. They have to be set in non-entanglement situations. So they require those individuals to clear all the brush and stalks greater than a half inch in diameter away from the area where the snare could potentially catch, because again, that's one of the key components to how snares are lethal, is if they can become entangled. So those are the states that that have that. I should also mention that those states also have a maximum length of a snare that they require. One is 5 foot, one is 7 foot. Again, the length of the snare, dependent upon how the animal reacts in the snare, the length of the snare can give that animal more room to lunge, which cinches the snare down quicker. And then finally there on the map, a few states such as Illinois and Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, they only allow snares to be used in the water, sets for beaver, otter, those types of things. There's no dry land snaring in those states. And then to draw your attention down there at the very bottom, the different types of public lands, and I think Tom is going to pass out a couple maps here to give you folks a feel for where those types of public lands occur in South Dakota. You can see the acreages amounts in the middle there. But basically in South Dakota, there's five different types of public land where snaring and trapping can occur. Our agency, Game Fish and Parks, manages the game production areas, which occur in red on your map, primarily east of the Missouri River, but you'll also see some areas out in western South Dakota. So those are the areas in red. The areas in green, those are going to be waterfowl production areas. Those are managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Those occur exclusively east of the Missouri River. Then we have the blue areas, the School of Public Lands. Those are managed by the Office of School and Public Lands, a state agency. Occur primarily in western South Dakota, but as well as central, and there are some up in the northeast like McPherson, Edmonds, Fault County, some of those areas, right around 750,000 acres statewide. And then, of course, we've got the U.S. Forest Service, which administers and manages the Black Hills National Forest, and then the different grasslands in South Dakota, south of Fort Pierre, up in Perkins County, and then Buffalo Gap down in Fall River, south of Wall, and some of those areas as well. And then, of course, there are the Bureau of Land Management. Those are the areas that are yellow and black hashed, occur exclusively in western South Dakota. You'll also see on your map there's some other public lands that are identified. They're orange. Those are walk-in areas. And while they're public lands, or they're private lands, excuse me, that are leased from the Department for Public Hunting, snaring and trapping can occur on those lands unless somebody gets landowner permission. So it's no different than private lands in regards to trapping on those acres. But that should give you a snapshot of some of those areas. And just to back up, I guess, the comments from the department on equipment restrictions, we didn't feel that it was really reasonable to require some of the restrictions that we talked about, having individuals have to clear brush everywhere where they have a snare set. We didn't feel that was reasonable. And then we did talk about trying to separate out some types of public lands. We talked about should we prohibit snaring until after the bird seasons are closed, for example, on game production areas and waterfowl production areas east of the Missouri River, where most of the pheasant hunting occurs. That's where most of those public lands occur. But talking to our field staff, there was concern, how do we pick and choose which users have preference over certain areas? So there wasn't a lot of support at the end of the day, I guess, to make a restriction like that, because it's just difficult for us to decide who has the right to use that public land at different times. And I guess then, summary, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and if you so choose to make a proposal, certainly you can do so, and I'll walk you through the process and or answer any questions to be able to get what you need to have. So.
Thank you, Keith. That was a good presentation. Are there questions? Okay. Commissioner Jensen.
Can you just remind us why the existing rule says from May 1 to November 13 there's no snare permitted on public land or with any improved road right away? I get the November 13th because we've had discussion about that, and I'm going to come back to that, but what's the reason for that May 1st time, and why does that have any relevance, I suppose, to West River? Because I have in mind maybe there's a West River versus East River and pheasant hunting change we can propose, at least see what the public thinks. But I don't remember why that May 1st date is there.
Sure. Commissioner Jensen, May 1, obviously I wasn't around at the time that was decided, but all the trapping seasons are done well before that. The last fur bearer season that occurs in South Dakota is in eastern South Dakota. It's beaver season. It ends on April 30th. There just wouldn't be any people that are out there setting those devices in May and during the summer months. So I'm sure the department just said, you know, May 1's the end of the fur bearing seasons, and there's no need to, people aren't going to be out there anyway, but we're going to just put an end date there.
So then another question I have is, I mean, maybe you could remind us, I mean, whether we're talking deer stands or game cameras or whatever, isn't everybody required to identify their equipment out in the field, so to speak, except for this one limited circumstance? Do I have that wrong, or is that right?
So, Commissioner Jensen, I talked to our law staff and thought about different types of equipment that are out on public lands. And you're correct. If you recall, a few years ago, we started to allow trail cameras on public areas. But one of the requirements was that they do have to have a person's name and address or an identification number on them. Same with tree stands, ground blinds, ice shacks. The only item that we could think of that didn't have a requirement would be decoys. Sometimes people use either goose or duck decoys, and it's not uncommon to sometimes leave those decoys out on the ponds or pulled up on shore until the next day so people don't have to haul them in and out. But that was the only other one that we could think of that didn't have their marking requirement.
And then I think I heard you say that every other state, at least in the surrounding area, requires identification of snares, right?
Yep, on that table there, midway through, you'll see all the surrounding states of South Dakota do require that.
And so if they were here and they were going to explain to us why they require that, what do you suppose they would say? I mean, what's their justification for that?
I would hate to say what I think theirs are, but I would imagine what it is it comes down probably from a law enforcement perspective. Again, if there was an illegal situation or a set that was out there, it at least gives those officers a starting point to potentially contact that individual or find out who that individual that has the device there.
Well, if I could, so I think I do want to make a proposal, and is it okay? Should I make it now, or do you want me to wait? And
let's see if there's other questions.
Sure.
And then we'll, any other comments on this? It's laid out pretty good. Yeah, I don't know anybody that just snares for fun. Most of them are after the pelts or the animal that they go out and snare. So that's mainly done in the winter time, of course. So any other comments
on
Chairman?
This?
Okay, Kathy?
Just a comment. I've seen where the snare can actually catch a human can get caught, and of course they're safe. They're not going to get hurt or anything, and it actually causes a little laughter among the others as the person tries to pull away and doesn't know what they got into. I just happened to be in a situation like that on my land, but it was actually on the driveway next to the ditch, so it was in the public land. And so I can see where it does cause problems during pheasant hunting season, and I don't know who takes precedence, a pheasant hunter versus a trapper, but that date going back to the end of pheasant season is also something that could get discussed. Right, wrong, I don't know if it's necessary or not, but I do see that it can cause, you know, a problem for a dog and stuff like that. Thank you.
Yeah, that, you know, whether they should be out there during pheasant hunting season, that's probably up for debate. I know over the years, you know, and I see quite a little sneering in my part of the country there that, you know, it used to be the snares have developed too. It used to be, you know, there was quite a little problems with cattle getting in the snares and that type of thing. And of course, they lose a foot out of that is what can happen. But now with the stops and everything that have been developed on snares, it's made them quite a little bit safer. But, you know, most people that use snares are pretty responsible. I mean, they shouldn't be snaring where cattle are, and they realize that, and that is, of course, a no-no. So, yeah, Gary, if you have something you would like to bring forward, I think this would be appropriate.
Well, I do, and I'm prompted in some part to do this because I'm encouraged by what we heard yesterday and the comments on the elk issue, because I think it was important for that to be heard and for the public to comment on it, and we certainly heard. And then we could talk about the same for the muskie issue, waterfowl, or whatever. To me, it's important that we respond to the situation that brought us here, at least by putting something out there for public comment. And if it doesn't go anywhere, if the public doesn't think there's a problem or an issue, so be it. But so that's my motivation for putting something out there, so the public can tell us what they think. And so I would propose that we require identification of snares on public land, like we require identification on almost everything else that's out there, and as every other state apparently does. And I know that'll be controversial, but I'd like to, I'm proposing that. And then I also would propose that we do not allow snaring on game production areas and waterfowl production areas east of the river during pheasant season. And I know Kathy talked about right-of-ways or roadways, and I mean, if you want to add to that.
Well, does that fall into, does right-of-ways, okay.
As I understand, Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division, as I understand Commissioner Jensen's proposal as he addressed it there, it would not include those road rights-of-way as stated anyway.
And so if you want to include those for this, I would,
for
the discussion, to send something out and to get some public comment, I would include that would, the prohibition against snaring would include road right-of-ways during pheasant season. So that would be part three or 2A or whatever.
Two components to that. First, again, improved road right-of-ways as it's described here.
Yes.
And secondly, East River only?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then I guess the fourth part of what I would propose is eliminating that time restriction west of the river, you know, the May 1 to November 13th. And so if people who want to snare west of the river, except the game production area, waterfowl production area, they could do that. So that's probably
Commissioner,
kind of a hodgepodge of things, but that's kind of, that's my proposal at the moment, and I'd like for us to talk about it.
Oh, if I can just clarify here, originally I had written down, you said, so we would prohibit snaring on game production areas and waterfowl production areas as well as improved road right-of-ways during the pheasant season east of the river.
Yes.
And then
you summarized that well.
And then your third component was that you would remove the date restrictions west river.
Yes. And then the other part is to require identification like we do on everything else and every other state apparently does.
If I could, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Commissioner, you make specific reference to marking of snares on public lands. Do you want it restricted only to snares or traps and snares?
Good question. Traps and snares.
Okay.
So that's my proposal.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Sharp, you're just clarifying the question. Would that pretty much encompass all bird hunting territory in East River? And I think Tony used improved right-of-ways, but we also have unimproved right-of-ways. So it sounds to me like where Gary's going is that if there's going to be pheasant hunting in East River, there should be no snares on that land during that time, any public land. So does his proposal encompass that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Sharp, right now the provision in state statute that allows individuals to hunt small game on road rights of way also include only those rights of way that have improvements on them. That's the way it's stated in the statute. So there would be alignment between where the restriction is and where hunting without permission on those road rights ways would be occurring.
And just to clarify, any of these proposals, none of these proposals would affect private property. So.
Right. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Olson, I just had a procedural question. When would this proposal be available for public comment and testimony? Which meeting and which city would we be in?
It's a good question. In fact, it's something that has come up along in the discussion of a timeline to ensure sufficient public notice. Obviously, we had some comments about that yesterday. So what we would do is, should this pass, we will get an action sheet put together, get that up on our website as quickly as we can out to all of you to make sure that we did get this put together properly. And then it could be heard and finalized at your May meeting in Custer State Park. But there's been some discussion that maybe a longer period would be appropriate, and especially to get out east again to where some of these things are happening. Sufficient time would be available should you wish to extend this to maybe a 60-day comment period and then have some chance for comment western part of the state in May and then back east in Aberdeen when you're up there in June.
I should have included that. I'm sorry, because there has been discussion about it. So instead of the normal 30-day, we could have a 60-day and have comment out West River at Custer State Park and then an East River in Aberdeen in June.
That'd be good.
Yeah. So I would include that as a part of this if it needs to be.
Okay.
One more question.
Go ahead.
So if we do it, have it at Custer State Park, do people need to buy a park pass to come in to testify?
In the past,
this could be a real revenue driver for us.
Well, no one from Parks is here to give you what the answer they'd like to have. No, actually, the commission meeting itself is going to be in Creekside, if I saw right, and I believe the public does have the ability to travel on that highway that passes through there without buying a park pass. So it's right on that highway. So if it's someone coming just to comment, I don't believe we would charge them an entrance.
They should buy one anyway.
They should buy one anyway.
No, we haven't heard a second.
I'll second.
Okay, you're going to second that. Okay, any other discussion of that? Will go out as a proposal then.
Chairman.
Go ahead, Commissioner Phillips.
If this proposal passes and it goes out for comment, I would, looking forward to the comments, there's going to be a lot of them, and would just suggest to the pheasant hunters and bird hunters out there that are thinking about commenting on this to be cognizant of the fact that these snares remove a lot of predators from these game production areas. And that's an issue we want to keep in mind, that we're removing predators that predate on our pheasants and our grouse, and we're asking them to be removed. And so keep that in mind as you make your comments, please.
That's a good point.
Mr. Chairman, a question again. I just want to get some clarity, because I'm sure you want to get clarity, too, on this, on what you're doing.
Excuse me.
I'm comfortable with the trap ID, but I just want to clarify, that would apply to all public lands, correct?
Correct.
The identification. Snares on, or restriction on snares on property during the pheasant season. You said GPAs and WPAs, but only those east of the Missouri River?
Yes.
Okay. And then all public land west of the Missouri River would have no restrictions on the use of that, of snares?
They just have to be identified.
Okay. The only hole that I see right now is other public lands that are east of the Missouri River. So they're kind of like school and public lands, as Keith mentioned. If you look at the map, there's a fair number of those, like up in Potter County and on into the North Central. They're kind of in a in-betweener now. Should they be part of the restriction, or are they part of the property that would be open?
Let's make them part of the proposed restriction.
So it'd be all, do we want to say all?
South Dakota lands as opposed to federal lands?
Could be all public lands, East River. See, once you put the East River component in there, I mean, I'm not sure that it's as critical to identify GPAs and WPAs, because that's where most of them are. Now, that's fine. I'm not trying to lead you in a different direction. I just want to make sure that we get something that's...
No, I get it. And I think, thanks for that. So, yeah, let's just... public lands, yeah. East of the river, that's all, easier to discuss.
All public lands east of the river, east of the, yeah.
Okay. And the additional benefit we have of the 60 days is we're going to be able to digest this for 30 days, and there may be some other something else that's happening here that we can come back and talk about, and you would have the opportunity to make some adjustments to this in May should we find another tripwire somewhere else. So that would be really good, but I think I'm clear on what you are asking for right now.
I think we've been able to maneuver our way around some pretty contentious issues once we get something out there and we hear back and we can adjust. And so we'll see.
Yes.
I would further echo Commissioner Phillips' comments. Oh, this is Commissioner Sharp. My sense is when we put forth proposals, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the path we're heading down, but we have an idea that there might be something we can do to make it safer for hunting dogs out there. And the way we do that is put forth questions that we hope the public then steps up and provides us their view on how we can reach a conclusion on what's going to be the best way to go forward. So we do look forward to the comments, and that doesn't mean that at the end of this our whole goal is to restrict all snaring on public lands. It's to make it safer for everybody to be in the field. So I look forward to all the comments coming forth.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Olson, question for Commissioner Jensen. And maybe I lost this. Did you say no snaring on public lands during pheasant season, or is it trapping and snaring?
Well, that's a good point.
Because I think about 90% of the muskrats harvested in the country are probably pulled off of public waters, and if you're gonna, we'll need extra rooms if we're gonna tell people they can't muskrat trap during pheasant season, which, as we know now, goes, I mean, 3 months, and so I'm just.
And I'm thinking we should limit it to sparing.
Yeah, that'd be better.
I think so.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
The trapping up on its own.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
Question, I guess, for Commissioner Jensen: could it be above water? Could we just have snaring above on land and leave the in water snaring alone?
I don't know what
Keith Phillips.
I need to know more, I guess, about below water snaring.
Commissioner Phillips, you indeed could do that. I mean, there are people that utilize snares in the water for beaver. Under the ice for beaver. I'm trying to think any other water sets for beaver that are, you know, below the water. That would be, you know, I suppose there's a few people that try to snare mink, I know. You could certainly do that. It would add another element of complexity. So it may be easier just to keep it with snaring, in my opinion.
So you're limited to snares. Snares only.
Mr. Chair, maybe I just want to make sure I understand Commissioner Jensen, so I'm going to repeat it. And Tony, you've been writing notes too, so make sure we get this right. So the proposal would be one would include or mandate that all traps and snares have to be identified on public lands and improved road right-of-ways statewide.
Yes.
Number two, we would prohibit snaring on all public lands east of the river until after the pheasant season, and including improved public road right-of-ways.
Yes.
And then number three, it would be to remove the date restrictions on all public remove the date restrictions on all public lands and improve road right-of-ways west of the river.
Yes.
Anything else?
I do have one point of clarification. When we say during the pheasant season, right now the start date is May 1st. Would you intend to move that start date up to the beginning of the pheasant season, or just move the end date to the end of the pheasant season? We have May 1st through November 13th now. You want to
just to move it to the end of the pheasant
okay.
season?
Okay, that's what I was thinking you wanted, but I just want clarity there. So the May 1st would stay there. The November 13th would change to the first Sunday in January, which is the closing date of our, that's set in administrative rule as the closing date for the pheasant season.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Commissioner Sharp here. What is the downside to include traps in this proposal when looking for public comments?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, I would say two things. One, in the last few years, we haven't had, to my knowledge, public reports of animals getting caught in traps. It's only been brought to our attention this past year, just in two situations in snares. The other comment that I'm thinking is that if you decided to include traps, I mean, that would really that would take away all fur harvesting opportunity on public lands until after the bird season.
This would be a warm up for the refuge discussion.
It will.
Okay, I think we're ready for a vote. any other comments? This will go out as a proposal then, and for 60 days. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Okay.
So we will get this written up, Mr. Chairman, and you will, all of you will have that early next week to get a look at it to make sure we're clear on the action that you just took.
Good. Okay. That'd be great. Okay. Need to stop? Okay. We'll... What do you think about the rest of the agenda there? Can we move that, hold it over? How do you want to?
We'll work with staff, Mr. Chairman, and we'll, some of those items will come back. We're not going to go away, so we'll be sure that you get briefed on those items. And so we're getting close enough to that hearing. I want to give you guys a chance to kind of clear your head, get the room set up the way we want to get it set up. So I think it'd be a good time to to adjourn.
So we should adjourn now?
Adjourn.
Okay. All right. That'll bring the meeting to a close. So we need a motion to adjourn. Okay, moved and seconded that we adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. And then we will set up for the public hearing. Okay.